The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Alongside that, you get a £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Lucy Dunn and today I'm joined by James Heal and Luke Trill from Pollsters More in Common. They're just over 2 weeks to go into the local elections in May and a number of councils and mayoralties across the country are being contested. Nigel Farage's Reform Party is hoping to make gains after months of polling well. And James, you were in Durham on Tuesday for Farage's election campaign speech. What were your main takeaways?
So I think on my first thought from hearing the speech was, you know, we've heard this all before. You can find on the BBC News an article from 2014 in which the then UKIP leader talks about parking his tanks on Labour's lawn and the fact he's leading the People's Army to these left behind areas. Now, 11 years on, of course, his chosen vehicle is Reform UK. But I do think on reflection, and you know, wrote a bit about this yesterday, but I think I've strengthened this view, which is that there was a nuance there. And let me explain, I think two particular areas in particular. The Telegraph asked him in the questions after the speech when he said, you know, do you blame the Unite Union for this? And of course, in terms of the Birmingham bin strikes. And Farage obviously answered with a bit of humour, saying that there are rats bigger than those seen on the Western Front, you know. But he also ducked the chance to attack the unions. And so he was talking about unions, with the exception of the National Education Union, who's one of whose senior people has just called Reform racist. But broadly, he was very warm about the rights of trade unions, etc., which I thought was interesting. So that's an example of him perhaps, you know, resisting the temptation to talk about Thatcher. He flipped the question. He was asked about the unions and he said it's actually about government weakness. So framing it as an example of sort of Labour and government failures rather than actually about the unions themselves being blamed. And I think that's very much following Richard Tice in the steel debate last week wearing the GMB trade union badge. It's worth mentioning, of course, you know, one in three trade unions voted Mrs. Thatcher back in 1979. And I think that in these kind of areas where, you know, Durham yesterday, where the speech was, Doncaster Council, where a lot of reformers are very excited about, that's exactly where they're going to be aiming. And I think that, you know, as one Tory MP said to me, you know, the V's and R lunch, and now they're after Labour vote. So that was the key point. And the second thing that was interesting, I thought, which he said yesterday, was when he was asked by Guardian, inevitably, you know, can you be someone who represents these areas? You're a very wealthy man. And he said, you know, you're right. I've done very well. I'm very fortunate. But I also want the same for my fellow man. And that was a gracious answer. And I think also we talked about the language of aspiration, which I think they're very keen to talk about. So there was that. There was also references to, you know, some of the local authority pressures, the sort of funding pressures on social care, for instance, which he acknowledged special educational needs. You know, I've never heard Nigel Farage that speech talk about SEND before. But I think that shows perhaps that, you know, they are very much going after Labour votes in a slightly more nuanced way. You also look around the language, for instance, of his Sun op-ed, where he talks about, you know, they splashed the Sun and they talked about how, you know, Keir Hardie would be very different from Keir Starmer. I think that's all about getting inside Labour's heads in both an elite level, but also showing how they're going after Labour votes. And really, I think that, you know, I think inevitably the big story, the two big stories of the election night when it comes in 2 weeks' time, I think the first one will be the scale of the Tory losses. And I think Kevin Bennett will have a very bad night, partly because 2021 was so lopsided. I think it was 2/3 of the seats that were won by the Tories on 45% of the vote. I suspect this time you'll see the Tories come top in sort of vote share, but it'll be high 20s or mid 20s rather than anything like last time. But the other story, I think, will be, you know, I think Runcorn may well go Reform, but I think the one below the bonnet is going to be about the Reform UK going after those Labour votes.
And look, while Farage may be feeling upbeat, how do the polls suggest the other major parties will fare at the May elections?
Well, it's quite difficult to see at the moment. I mean, if you look at the national opinion polls, we've basically been in this rather stagnant three-way tie now for quite some time. Our latest poll out today had Reform on 24%, Labour on 24%, and the Tories on 23%. So it is quite tight at the top there. The Liberal Democrats, interestingly, seem to be bobbing up and down a little bit. So they were up as high as 17%. Last week, that was their highest across different pollsters since 2019, I think, down a little bit this week. It seems to depend a little bit on how much Ed Davey is in the news. And of course, he's trying to own that anti-Trump mantle. But what we don't know is the extent to which those opinion poll performances will translate into votes in those local elections. So what we know is since the general election, we know that Reform are up about 10 points. Labour are down about 10 points. The Tories maybe about what they scored in the general election, maybe a couple of points lower. But I think the question that I'll be trying to answer from those results and lots of other people in polling is, can Reform actually turn their momentum in polls into a decent performance in those local elections? Because they should, based on the polls, be doing very well. You know, on a very good night, you would expect to see them, you know, potentially emerge as the largest party in terms of number of seats. You know, they could get, you know, around 500 seats. Certainly, if they're performing in line with their polling, we'd expect between 350 and 500 seats. As James mentioned, we are expecting big Conservative losses. And, you know, it is, you know, as James said, slightly unfortunate for Kemi Badenoch that her first electoral contest is going to be pitching her against Boris Johnson's performance following that vaccine bounce. There does seem to be some evidence, and there was a poll out earlier this week from Servation, that they might do slightly better than some of the most dire forecasts. But I would be surprised if on current polling we weren't talking about them losing around, you know, 600 seats would be my median estimation. And, you know, that is really hard for a new leader to, you know, to start their first electoral test with, you know, ending up somewhere between 450 and 500 seats there. And then for the other parties, it's, you know, these elections are a bit of a mix. This actually isn't that big of a test for Labour, simply because, A, they didn't do very well in 2021. This was, of course, the set of elections after which people questioned whether Keir Starmer could hang on as Labour leader. It was the same time as that Hartlepool by-election, the height of Boris mania. You know, so there's only around 300-ish seats that they held at the moment. And I think, you know, a good result for them would be, you know, limiting the losses to 20 or 30. More likely, we're going to see them lose somewhere between 50 and 100 seats, so end up on about 200 overall. And then the Liberal Democrats. So, you know, good night for them. They might get around, you know, 350 seats. Could vie to be the largest party on seats. I think that's slightly unlikely. Middling night, gaining between 50 and 130. And then, of course, we have the Greens. I think the Greens are really interesting because, to some extent, they have been the dog which hasn't barked so far this parliament. You know, there have been a lot of people speculating that kind of left-wing disillusionment with Labour would see a burst in support for the Greens. And there have been odd local by-elections. In fact, there was one last week in Haringey where the Greens took the seat from Labour on quite a big swing there. But in general, their poll rating, you know, they've only gone up, you know, 1-2 points in the national opinion polls. And of course, again, lots of these seats are not in direct contest with Labour, but they should certainly be looking to improve their seat total, maybe to get around, you know, 50 gains as well. So they're where I see the benchmarks. But I think the main story of those local elections is going to be, how bad are those Conservative losses? As I say, you know, the Conservatives are getting up to 700 losses. That's way worse than we might have thought. If it's around 600, 500, maybe it's okay. If it's less than 500, Kemi Badenoch is, weirdly, it seems a weird thing to say, losing fewer than 500 seats, Kemi Badenoch may be doing slightly better than we think. And for Nigel Farage, I think the number is around 500 would show they really have serious momentum.
Yeah, and I think the other benchmarks to look at them, and I don't know if Luke agrees, but is, of course, 2013, when in the midterm blues of that coalition government, UKIP managed to get 23% of the vote. You'd expect to see Reform, you know, getting around that this time, whether it can be better or worse. Just to add on the other point about, I think, the left, which is an interesting story. We've had a lot of debate over the past 6 months or so on the right of British politics, Unite the Right, or the splitting of the right, etc., on the left. The other thing that, you know, I did this piece on the Liberal Democrats, which I spoke to Luke for a few weeks ago, and talking about how actually some of those, you know, the surge we're seeing in the polls for the Liberal Democrats in terms of 2 or 3 points up, those mostly come from left-wing Labour voters who, you know, particularly in sort of urban areas, are sort of shifting over. You remember there was the tradition, of course, of Liberals in urban areas. You think of Bermondsey, famously, Simon Hughes, which he lost in 2015. That could be a potential sort of area where they're making some gains there. And I think there's different lenses to look at it. Obviously, we all look at it through, you know, party labels. But the other way to look at it is through government versus opposition. You know, this Labour government is not going to have a Buy British campaign. That is the explicit rules of Rachel Reeves, and they're committed to a free trade, etc. But of course, that opens that space for the Ed Davey to then position himself as the sort of union checked protector of a lot of these causes, which has a lot of appeal to the soft left, which is about sort of saying, I'm going to Buy British, etc. I think we should stand up to Trump. And, you know, Ed Davey will never become prime minister. He therefore has complete liberty to do what Keir Starmer cannot do and attack Trump repeatedly. And it works very well with lefty voters who think, oh, you know, Labour won't represent me on this and that, etc. And I do think more intellectually, we saw under Harold Wilson, and then we saw under Jim Callaghan, you saw the sort of new left of the late 60s, you saw the industrial action of the 70s, you saw at the end of the new Labour years, the tail end of that, the anti-globalisation protest. I suspect you'd see in the 2020s, Labour governments often coincide, the disappointment of Labour government, with a fueling on the left, both at an intellectual level and at a democratic level as well. So I wonder if, you know, the story of Keir Starmer's Labour Party might be that he came in to stamp out the left, and ultimately perhaps it'll be a revenge of the left further down the line.
And it doesn't take much, I should say, for the left to start causing Keir Starmer and the Labour Party problems. And I think, you know, a lot of the briefing you hear from Number 10 is that, you know, the challenge is reform and they need to be taking on reform. The truth is that it doesn't take much tactical unwind. That is, voters who voted for Labour saying, actually, do you know what? I'm going to go for the Lib Dems. I'm going to go for the Greens, to start costing them seats. And what that doesn't mean is the Liberal Democrats and the Greens gaining seats. What it means is in areas actually where Labour are fighting reform, those voters saying, do you know what, I'm not going to vote for Labour, I'm going to abstain, I'm going to vote for another party of left, that could actually let reform in. And so I think what you're seeing from Downing Street is quite a big bet at the moment that they need to focus a lot of the electoral offer on those reform Labour swing voters and some of the Labour Tory swing voters. And that actually the threat of Prime Minister Farage will in of itself be enough to make those left-wing voters come back home come the election. But it is quite a big gamble.
And James, you know, talking about Labour versus reform, there's that Runcorn by-election as well that will be held at the start of May. Could reform pick up another MP here?
Yeah, I think they're quite confident of that. And I think there was initial bullishness, which they're now trying to sort of temper down slightly. They've done at least two mail shots to every house in the constituency. You can see that they've had a whole sort of campaign going before spending limits kicked in, because that's, you know, it was obvious where Mike Amesbury was going at the end of last year. And, you know, there was some discussion within reform about whether the writ would be moved before Christmas or after, etc. Obviously, they've timed it to coincide with the local elections, and I think that's probably a sensible strategic move for Labour, because obviously the story, as we've discussed on this podcast, is going to be probably Kemi Badenoch's losses, and therefore you can sort of get it in there. I do think reform is a little bit perhaps worried about sort of some of the attacks at this stage on the NHS, etc., in terms of that's what where Streeting is leading the charge on and saying, you know, reform wants to privatise NHS or introduce a French-style system, etc. I suspect in those sort of very Labour areas, the Northwest, that might have some effect. But I think overall reform should be the ones to take it. I'd only add also that, you know, to their credit, Labour's, although their by-election machine wasn't always the best before the last parliament, the Northwest is widely respected as one of Labour's stronger areas. I think that reform will most likely to take it, but I think Labour will in the circumstances do decently, because as Farage said yesterday, it is, according to their metrics, the 16th safest seat that Labour won at the last election. And of course, they won it with an absolute majority, 52% of the vote, rather than just an overall majority.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Luke. And thank you for listening.